America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Anything Ghost, number 274. The leftover Halloween episode. Anything Ghost. My name is Lex Wall. Anything Ghost is a place where people share their personal experiences with ghosts and local ghost legends, and I share them with you on the show. If you have one you want to share, send it to lex@anythingghost.com. Coming your way is a lot of new material, a couple of stuff from the archives, and a lot of stuff from that didn't make the deadline for the Mega Macabre Halloween special. So stay where you are for show number 274. Okay, this first story is from Annie in Yorkshire, UK. It's called The Garden House. And this is actually from episode number 148 of January 2012. It's from the archives. I grew up in the 60s and 70s in a house called Garden House. My parents bought it in the 1950s after my grandfather, a retired farmer, had rented it for some years. This happened in Yorkshire, England. The house was an old farmhouse, with walls 3 feet thick, and it had an acre of land and some old farm buildings. Our house was a maze of different rooms, built at different times. Some parts of it were 18th century, other parts 19th century, and the part where we saw what we saw, a nice, boring, modern bedroom built in the 1950s, that happened when part of the old house virtually collapsed and had to be rebuilt. I remember my dad saying that there was a time when the kitchen ceiling was held up with a tree trunk. In 1971, my mom died suddenly and unexpectedly, which left Dad alone to bring up myself and my brother. I was 10 when she died, so when this happened, I would have been 12 or 13. By around 1973, Dad had met his wartime sweetheart again, someone he'd known before my mom, and she was widowed with 4 kids of her own. They decided to get married. But I'm moving ahead of myself. This story took place some time before that. As my stepmom-to-be came from the other end of England, when she and her daughters visited, they had to stay with us in our house. It was a huge house with 5 bedrooms, no problem. But to fit everyone in, the girl who was to become my stepsister, and was the same age as me, we were born only weeks apart, had to share a room. The only double bed was in my dad's room, so he slept on the sofa downstairs, and we shared the bed in his room. I think they were staying with us for a week this time, in the school holidays, so my future stepsisters and myself and my brother could get to know each other and hopefully bond. My own bedroom was in the old part of the house. It was a novelty to sleep in the new part, so I was quite looking forward to it. One night, early in their stay, we went to bed as usual. This is so vivid to me, even 40 years later. I can even remember. I was sleeping on the side of the bed nearest the door. My nearly stepsister and I were no longer chatting, so I must have guessed she was asleep. I don't remember being woken up, so I'm not sure if I'd even fallen asleep yet. But suddenly, about a yard away from me, I saw an elderly man. He was so close to me, I could have reached out and touched him, only he wasn't solid. He was made of little pinpricks of light. I remember thinking at the time, he looked like something from a comic, made up of dots of color, what we call pixels now. I knew instantly from his clothing, he was either Victorian or Edwardian. We had old photos I treasured, all my mom's old family ones my dad had given to me, so I knew from them. My family had farmed for generations, and this man looked like the old farmers in my photos. Strangest of all, he was seated, but the chair was not visible, and worse still, he was floating in the air several feet above the floor, and he was totally unaware of me, just looking down at his hands as if he was doing something like a craft. But whatever that was, I couldn't see either. Nothing there. I was so terrified I couldn't move. Just froze and stared at him, absolutely petrified he was going to look up. No, he couldn't see me. If he had looked up, he was so close. At the same time, I felt like he was definitely not of this time and had no clue I was there. I have no idea how long I stared at him, but I suddenly got the courage to move, and I turned around to face my sleeping friend so rapidly I banged my head hard on the metal head of the bed. That's what told me it wasn't a dream. As the next day, I had an almighty bruise and bump on my forehead. Throughout, my soon-to-be stepsister slept on, totally oblivious to this thing that had just been yards away from her and right by my bedside. I eventually plucked up the courage to roll over and peep at where it had been hovering, and it was gone. The next morning, I was so shaken by it, I decided to tell my dad. He was an arch skeptic about anything supernatural or religious. So I was a bit scared of his reaction, as Yorkshire men are famously blunt and direct. I decided not to say anything to my near stepsister, as she slept through it, and in any case, although my dad had known her mom many years, these folks were still strangers to me. I liked them, and thought that they might be scared off, not by the paranormal, but thinking I was mad. Surprisingly, my dad took it in stride. It was his bedroom, after all. He said he'd never seen or experienced a thing in there, but maybe, he said, old buildings retain memories like tape recorders and sometimes play them back. Maybe one day psychics can explain it, just a blip in time. I was quite shocked he reacted so positively, expecting him to think I had gone crazy too. One thing he did say when rebuilding that part of the house, which had happened long before I was born in the 1950s, they had lowered the floor level by several feet, which tallied with what I had seen, the man floating several feet in the air. Maybe that's why he believed me. After the visitors left, I never slept in that room again. Years went by, and I never did tell my stepsister or anyone but my dad this story. My dad told me later in life, when I asked, that he'd never told it to my stepmom either. Maybe both of us were scared they'd think something was up with me. In the 1980s, I met my now husband, and I told him the story of the 19th century man in the new part of the house many times. But I was never sure if he believed me. fast forward to 15 years later. We met up with my stepsister and her partner to go for a meal. We were getting along splendidly. In the middle of the evening, my stepsister said, "You know, I never told you this, because we were only just getting to know each other, and I thought you'd think I was mad. That the first time we stayed at the garden house, remember when you and I had to sleep in your dad's room? Well, one night you were fast asleep, and I saw the weirdest thing. An old man floating in midair in that bedroom. He seemed to be sitting on a chair, but the chair wasn't there, and..." She went on to describe in absolute detail precisely what I had seen. My husband nearly fainted. I could see him going white as a sheet as she talked. I had told him this story, but apart from him and my dad, no one knew it. And if he hadn't believed me before, he certainly did when she got to the end of the story. I let her tell the whole story. I let her get right to the end before I told her, "Yes, me too." She swore I was asleep when I saw it, and I was fairly sure she was asleep when I saw it. So we came to the conclusion that it must have been different nights on the same week. We'll never know for sure if he visited us once or twice, but the story doesn't quite end there. Once I explained I'd seen it too, and my poor other half picked himself up off the floor, my stepsister's partner chipped in with, "You heard what happened to me and Aunt Polly when we were all staying there, one weekend after you went away to the university." No, I hadn't. My dad had never told me a thing. It turned out that, years later, my stepsister was staying at Garden House with her partner, and there were some other guests at the house. It was a three-story house, and guests were spread out over two floors, in different rooms than the one we'd seen the man in. Everyone had turned in for the night, and around 2 a.m., John, my stepsister's partner, was awakened by a furious hammering at the front door. Only, it wasn't coming from the front door, but from the place right off to the side of it. It was the voice of an elderly man, and very, very abusive, cursing and swearing and screaming obscenities. It was so loud that John expected it must have waken up the whole street. Eventually it stopped. My stepsister had slept through it. The next morning at breakfast, Auntie Paula, my step-aunt, asked if anyone else had been awakened by a foul man hammering on the front door and shrieking abuse at 2 a.m. No one had, only her and John. He was in a room on the first floor. That's British English for second story. She was in a room in the floor above. She said it was so loud she couldn't believe people over the road hadn't come to the house or called the police. My stepmom, my dad, and the other guest had all slept right through it. In the mid-1990s, the large house got too much for them, and my dad and my stepmom decided to sell up. Dad decided to have the house renovated before they sold it, and he had someone come over and strip off the pebble dashing that had covered the front of the house since before he bought it. Assuming there'd be some nice, picturesque Yorkshire limestone underneath, that would appeal more to the buyers. He was right. When the pebble dash came off, underneath was nice 18th or 19th century stone and lintels showing the original door position, many yards to the right of the front door in the house as we knew it. He had lived there 40 years, but had no idea the front door had been moved. My dad told me after he moved out that in the decades he lived there, he never once had a single paranormal experience. But I find that hard to believe, as the two of us, who borrowed his bedroom for just a few days, both had an experience in that brief time. How could he not have? I often wonder whether the people who bought that house have had anything paranormal happen to them at the garden house. And while we're in the UK, we're going to hear another story from the UK by Louis, the haunted hairdresser. This is a story from Lincolnshire in the United Kingdom. I was talking to my mum today, and at the end of our conversation, she meekly said she had a story for me. It's funny, I thought she would have been enthusiastic to share this story, but it seems to have shaken her. And I'd been staying with my mum as we awaited the funeral. She said there's an old wives' tale that after bereavement, you are more sensitive to things, so you could perhaps put this down to that. Now the funeral is past. We all have gone back to our usual routines. So on Saturday, she went back to her local hairdressers in the parade of shops in her town. The town is made up of three rooms, separate but knocked together in a way you could see through. The first by the door is the reception, which was unmanned, and where you would sit if you were waiting. The second room has the chairs and the mirrors, and was where my mum and another customer were sitting, socially distanced, with two hairdressers. The third room had the sinks, washing machine, and stairs to the upstairs. My mum was sitting in the chair with her glasses off, but looking into the mirror. She can still see, but not exacting detail, to be fair. But at some point, she became aware that someone was waiting by the reception counter. The person was standing patiently. He was tall and wearing a dark overcoat. He was standing there long enough that my mum became agitated that nobody was serving them. She was turning her head to see better, but the hairdresser asked her to be still. "What's wrong?" my mum said. "I think you should serve that person. They've been waiting there for a while." The three other women looked at her blankly. "There was nobody there," they said. That's when the hairdresser explained that they have a ghost. But usually he's upstairs. They've seen him several times. And she's so scared of being left alone, she avoids it at all costs. Mum felt instantly guilty. She didn't mean to scare her. She truly thought someone was waiting. So she played it down. "Must have just been a person walking past," she said. But she said to me, she knows what she saw. Over the past 14 years of Anything Ghost, many stories have involved the loss of a loved one, like that previous story. It's a terrible thing that we'll all have to deal with at some point. At times like those, it's so important to have someone you can lean on or talk to. That's why it's good to know the online counseling of BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp, is there with a licensed professional therapist to help you through trying times like that. At BetterHelp, you'll be matched with your own licensed professional, someone who will help you develop strategies for coping with grieving, with stress, relationships, anger, family conflict, sleeping, anything that is affecting the happiness and well-being in your life. And you'll address these matters without ever leaving the comfort of your own home, and knowing that anything you share is completely confidential between you and your licensed professional. If money problems are an issue, it's good to know that BetterHelp is more affordable than your brick-and-mortar offline counseling. Plus, BetterHelp has financial aid available. BetterHelp is professional. It's convenient. It's affordable. It's confidential. And all of you Anything Ghost listeners from other countries, listen up. BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. So it's no surprise that, because so many people are using BetterHelp, they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Don't let that problem linger. Get some help, get some better help, and start living that happier life you deserve. As an Anything Ghost listener, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting www.betterhelp.com/anythingghost. That's 10% off your first month by visiting www.betterhelp.com/anythingghost. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/anythingghost. This is from Liz in Florida. It was bobbing from behind a tree. This happened to myself and my cousin. Both of us were about 12. We were on my aunt's farm in the Pocono Mountains. My family would often meet with other family members for lunch on the weekends. I liked to help my cousins with their farm chores. And as we got older, this started to involve climbing up into the hayloft via the exterior ladder of the barn to drop bales of hay down to the awaiting cows in the lower level of the barn. The barn was located in the center of the rectangular field. The far edge of the fence backed into a single row of trees. These were young oak trees, and therefore were very tall and thin, and only had branches up near the top. One fall day, I descended first after dropping the bales down, and waited for my cousin at the bottom as he made his way down the ladder. As I watched him climb, I noticed his attention turned toward the tree line. There, about 5 feet up from the ground, was a white solid sphere which arrhythmically bobbed in and out from behind the tree. It looked almost like a white balloon, except it wasn't glossy and it appeared more solid. What was the most perplexing was that no branches on such a low part of the tree for some piece of trash or bag or a balloon to get stuck on. But that object didn't bob with the wind. It seemed to move with purpose, as if it was taunting us, sporadically peeking in and out from behind the tree. This truly frightened us, and we dashed down the hill and back to the house. After looking back again, the object was gone. And here's a story from Brooklyn, New York. John Yates's Ghost, 1889. Christmas time, 1889, Brooklyn, New York. John Yates was a popular figure around Brooklyn's City Hall. He was broad-shouldered, stood over 6 feet tall, had a striking personality, and as a result of a severe attack of smallpox about 18 years prior, he had a disfigured face and loss of one eye. Although everyone knew of him, nobody knew very much about his background, except that he was from England, he had a sister over there, and he was over 60 years old. John had worked at the local press for over 25 years. He would work from very early morning until late at night. He would spend his mornings, before work, reading the newspaper at a restaurant where they saved a seat for him each day. In 1889, John was renting a room in a three-story brick home at 39 Green Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, at the corner of Carlton. That home is no longer there, as it was replaced by a several-story brick apartment building in 1900. At the Green Avenue home, he lived with a few others: the housekeeper, a religious healer named Fanny M. Silsby, and one other tenant. John Yates was a very private man, but one of his daily habits that the other tenants were familiar with was that every morning at 5 a.m. he would take a bath. On Sunday, December 23rd, Mr. Yates had been out doing errands, but returned home by 3 p.m. One of his friends later said that John told him he wasn't feeling well. This struck his friend as odd because he was always doing well and didn't complain about his health. The following morning, December 24th, 1888, the other tenants noticed that John didn't take his daily bath. Concerned, they knocked on his door. No answer. They tried to open the door, and it was locked from the inside. Fearing something was wrong, the tenants contacted the police. The police broke into the room and found John Yates fully dressed and lying face down in his bed. The bedding hadn't been disturbed. He was dead, and it was believed he died of a stroke when he got home at 3 p.m. Sunday. Newspapers in Brooklyn, New York, displayed their sadness with the loss of the very popular John Yates, with lengthy obituaries that gave a background on his popularity and what he meant to the news organizations, as well as what he meant to the Brooklyn area. The ghost. A few weeks had passed since the discovery of John Yates's dead body in his bedroom, and his room remained unrented. As stated earlier, another of the tenants at the 39 Green Avenue home was Fanny Silsby. She worked as a religious healer. She had several clients in the area as well as out of town. One afternoon, Fanny was getting ready to leave for an out-of-town appointment. A real estate professional, William Kaufman, who had been having sleep difficulties, knocked on the door. Kaufman had been a no-show for a previous session with Fanny, so Fanny was a little upset and bluntly told him he would have to come back at another time. Fanny left the home in a hurry and left Kaufman in the house putting on his rubber footwear for the inclement weather. The housekeeper was at the home at the time. Being a real estate professional, Kaufman decided to take a look around the home before leaving. When Fanny returned from her appointment, she went up to her room and noticed that a very expensive gold watch that she had left on her dresser was missing. After talking to the housekeeper, she processed her day and began to believe that Kaufman had stolen the watch, also because the housekeeper said she saw Kaufman wandering around the home before he left. Fanny went to go speak to Mr. Kaufman and accused him of stealing her watch, but he emphatically denied or taking or knowing anything about her missing watch and was insulted by the accusation. A few days later, Fanny found something strange in the home. In one of the empty rooms, she found an empty tin box, a bottle of morphine, and half-burned candlestick. She reported this to the police. Two police came to the Green Avenue home and made a thorough search. They found nothing. But as the police were searching a large closet in the basement, they heard strange noises and pounding on the walls. The noises sounded like something smashing glass, and the sound was so loud that it disturbed the occupants of the adjoining house. They could find no explanation for the noises, so the two officers decided at that point to remain in the home overnight. Around midnight, two officers were joined by a sergeant and a telegraph officer. During the night, all four of these professionals heard mysterious noises and knocks on the wall, and as such, they decided to stay the following night. By Saturday morning, in despair, the police gave up on their search. The sergeant said at one point of the stay, they were sitting in the basement, and they could hear pieces of coal rattling against the walls of the cellar. But as soon as they hurried down into the cellar, they found everything in its place and still as a grave. There was no evidence of coal being thrown about. These stories of knocks on the walls, Fanny's watch going missing, and strange sounds started rumors that the ghost of the recently dead John Yates was haunting the home where he had died so suddenly at 39 Green Avenue. In the coming days, the mysterious sounds the police witnessed continued, as well as loud footsteps and laughter. But as suddenly as it all started, it all stopped within a couple of weeks. Fanny Silsby ended up taking that real estate professional, Mr. Kaufman, to court for her missing watch. The case was delayed until May or June. Kaufman never showed up because he was in the hospital for his sleep disorder. But he was arrested for not showing up to the court case. I was unable to find out what happened with the case. But was the ghost of the popular John Yates, after having died a sudden death, trying to reach out to the other tenants of the 39 Green Avenue home by knocking on the walls, walking loudly around the home, and finally by taking Fanny's gold watch? We'll never know the answer to that. And this is a story from Emily in Lakewood, Washington. Lunchroom Ghost. Just over a year ago, I got eye surgery that's changed my life. And to celebrate, I thought I would write into you because your podcasts helped me while I was healing. The type of eye surgery I got made it so I could barely see for the first week, meaning I couldn't read, play on my phone, or watch TV to pass the time. And it was a lot of pain. I could, however, listen to your podcast, so before the surgery, I paid to join the VIP group for the archive. I listened to the archive for days following the surgery to help me get through it. But now I've decided to contribute a small story of my own. I currently live in Washington State, due to the military, but I grew up in New Hampshire. My middle school was small, and it was located across from a cemetery. There weren't really any rumors about ghosts or anything, like you would assume. But I did have one paranormal thing happen to me there. I was getting in line to go down to the lunchroom one day. It was one of those days where you're just really tired and grumpy. I just wanted to be left alone. But while I was in line, I felt someone poke me. I said, "What?" without turning around, because I wasn't in the mood to talk or joke. But then it poked me harder, to the point where it started to hurt. But it didn't say anything, so I whipped around, ready to cuss them out. But there was no one close enough to have poked me. No one was behind me in line. I was so confused, and went through the rest of the day in a daze, trying to make logical sense of it. I never told anyone, because they'd think I was a kid with an overactive imagination. But I know you and your listeners don't judge. Next up is a story from Marion, Indiana. Railroad Crossing Ghost, 1908. On April 22nd, 1907, at 10:30 a.m., Nora and Goldie McCone, sisters, were riding in a light delivery wagon pulled by a horse, not far from their home on East 3rd Street in Marion, Indiana. They were heading home after shopping. Their brothers, Edward and Harry, were traveling close behind them in a different buggy. As the two sisters were crossing railroad tracks that cross East 3rd Street, an urban train, a type of cable car, was traveling at a high rate of speed coming at them. But because of a high embankment at the tracks, the girls were unable to see the train. The train smashed into their wagon, cut loose the horse, who was uninjured, and hurled both the sisters 100 feet. They landed at the bottom of the high embankment. Their brothers witnessed the horrific accident. Goldie McCone was 15 years old, and Nora was 26. Their mother had died 1 year prior, and a sister had died just a few weeks before that tragedy. Their father, Albert, refused any compensation from the rail company, only asking that they cover the funeral expenses. Nora and Goldie were placed in a custom-made casket that was wide enough to fit both girls. They situated the two in the casket so that the younger girl's head was resting on the arm of the older sister. The funeral brought an estimated 2,500 people to the small town, and as such, snarled-up traffic jammed the streets. The two sisters were buried at the IOOF Cemetery in Marion, Indiana. The Ghost. A year after the tragedy in 1908, the people who lived in the vicinity where the McCone sisters lost their lives reported a headless ghost roaming the area. They began to call the ghost the Shirtwaist Woman. The name was given to the ghost, ignoring the fact that she had no head, but rather giving attention to what the ghost wore. The ghost was dressed in a shirtwaist with a black skirt. Everyone said the ghost was without a doubt the only ghost who ever appeared wearing two colors. I didn't know this, but a shirtwaist was a blouse some women wore in the late 1800s. It was somewhat puffy, almost like a pirate shirt, and it was tucked in at the waist of a long skirt, which was often a darker color than the shirtwaist. And then it was topped off with a belt around the waist. The headless ghost was said to frequent the area where the McCone sisters were killed in 1907. In fact, locals began gathering around the area the ghost was seen to try to catch a glimpse of the headless ghost. One night, someone yelled out that they saw the ghost, and the waiting crowd went scrambling home. From what I was reading, women wearing a shirtwaist was a common thing to see at the train station platforms back in the late 1800s, as they waited for their husbands, etc., to arrive. So even if this headless ghost wasn't one of the poor sisters who lost their lives, it could well have been the ghost of a woman waiting for someone to arrive at the Marion train station. If you want to add a delicious and nutritious variety of foods to your life, I suggest you check out HelloFresh. All the recipes HelloFresh sends to your doorstep include high-quality, pre-portioned ingredients. So if you have a lot of time crunching going on in your life, and you don't want to substitute time for healthy eating, HelloFresh is an excellent solution. Outside of the fact that you won't have to make trips to the grocery store, shop, stand in line, and drive back home again, the recipes only take about 30 minutes to prep and cook. The eating time of these delicious dishes is all on you. And HelloFresh puts it all right there in one box on your doorstep, packed in almost entirely recyclable and or already recycled content, which makes HelloFresh's carbon footprint 25 times lower than store-bought grocery-made meals. And again, all the ingredients are so fresh. My last HelloFresh food box included a recipe for an Italian minestrone soup with garlic bread. Each recipe comes with a colorful, concise instruction card with pictures to guide you along the way. I followed the card's instructions and was eating this 5-star restaurant-tasting soup and garlic bread in less than 30 minutes. I can't say enough about the delicious flavor of the soup. I'd never made soup from scratch before, and the fresh ingredients did it all. And it's always a great pleasure when the new box arrives, and I get to take a look at the new 5-star recipes I will be enjoying that week. Here's the new HelloFresh offer for you Anything Ghost listeners. You'll get $90 off, including free shipping, by going to HelloFresh.com/anything90 and using the code anything90. Go to HelloFresh.com/anything90 and use the code anything90 to get $90 off, including free shipping. HelloFresh.com/anything90 with the code anything90. And I'm going to continue on with the story from the Anything Ghost Archive. This was Halloween of 2017, and it was from Troy, and sorry, I'm hitting the microphone. It was from Troy in Seattle, Washington, and it was his great-aunt Rachel's ghost story. And she has a thick accent at the beginning, but it clears up as the story goes on. So I hope you enjoy it. From Halloween of 2017.
Are you sure he's going to work out here on the porch? And all them cars going by. I think it might be a bit too loud. But I won't tell you the story. It's chilly out, ain't it? Huh? It's cold out. If you get too cold, we'll go back into the house. Well, I reckon what y'all want to hear is about my nephew give you my name, I guess. And well, we lived out there in Midway, Kentucky for a while. And we had this little old house out there. Mom and Dad and them, Daddy built it. And I had my two brothers, Tom and Billy. And they lived out there, and Mom and Daddy died. And it was just me for a while, running it by myself. And Tom and Billy come out there and help us. But I eventually did marry, of course, my husband, Ted. And we lived there for, I reckon we was only married for about 4 or 5 years. But now, see, his parents had money. They had a big old farm out there and sold it. And so that went to me when he passed. So I got to keep the house, stay out here. And I've lived here, well, I reckon since 1945 or 6, something like that, in a while. Well, what happened was one night, I reckon it was on a Sunday night. I think it may have been about 1974 or 3. I can't remember. It was whenever old Nixon was in office. As I was sitting there looking at the news, and they talked about that old water belt or water gate or whatever it was. And I heard something outside there. You can see it right over there, them bushes. And you see where the swing is, the little swing over there. Well, I kindly noticed out of the corner of my eye while I was watching the TV program that something kind of moved over there. Now, it was raining out. Now, kindly hard and wasn't storming, but just windy, you know. So I thought the wind was blowing something around. I hear that old swing over there blowing in the breeze, you know. And I didn't get too scared. As back then, you know, nobody come out and hurt you like they do today. But I thought maybe I was hearing an animal or something out there. And I heard it jarring out there, something walking around. It sounded like somebody's footsteps or something, you know. And I thought, well, Lord, I wonder what's happened. Maybe somebody got lost out here, or the car broke down. You didn't know. It was just me, so I was kind of scared. I had my little old poodle dog, Pepper, and she was barking. And I says, hush, Pepper, and I put that TV on quiet, you know. And I looked out there, and I was straining to see. And I seen just the top of some what I thought was, it looked like a head, like a forehead with hair on it, you know. And I was just a squinting. And then it kind of, I don't know, it looked then like somebody had stepped out of the bushes, but I don't know. And it just appeared there. And it was a woman. She looked maybe like she was, I don't know, maybe in her 30s or something. She wasn't old, but wasn't a little girl neither. And I was looking at her, and she just standing there, see, with her. She had her eyes open, and they wide, and just looking at me. And I just stood for a minute or two, because I couldn't know if that's what I was seeing, you know, because you don't know at the time when you see something like that. And she just standing there, and the rain going, you know, but her dress didn't look wet. I remember that was the weird thing, is that the dress wasn't wet. It was kind of blowing, and she looked like she's kind of, I don't know how, I've never seen nothing like it other than maybe like if somebody was showing a movie picture or something, but it looked like she was kind of, you know, lit up. And she just stood there with her hands to her side. She's wearing a dress, looked like one of them little old spring dresses, you know, and her hair fixed back. And I thought, well, Lord, have mercy, what's she doing out there? And I was kind of scared, I reckon you would be. And I remember standing there, and I thought, I don't know if she could see me or not. I was peeping out just behind that curtain there. And directly, I don't know how long it had been. It couldn't have been more than a couple of minutes. She started walking, you know, closer to the house there. And I reckon it was about maybe 50 or 60 feet away. She come up closer to the window there, and I was peeped down, and I mean little Pepper was barking her head off, and I was trying to hush her. And that woman stood there, and then she just all at once held her hands out, both of them straight out, you know, just straight out, like almost like she's going to hug somebody, but more like she was trying to, I don't know, grab you or what. But then the thing that I'll never remember is I looked in her eyes, and she didn't have no, what do you call them, little dots in your eyes? What is it? Huh? Pupils, yeah. She didn't have none of them, just eyes, you know. And her, she then all of a sudden that mouth flew open like she was screaming or hollering or something like that. I never seen such a face. And I've seen them old scary movies, and I thought, my Lord, and I thought, well, is the TV causing that, you know? And she just stood there with that mouth like she was screaming, and them hands held out. Well, I couldn't know what to do, and I was so scared I made sure that door was locked, but I felt bad leaving her out there, you know. And I went back over and I crept up on the floor. I was on all fours. And Pepper looking at me. And I reached up over and got that phone directly trying to dial the police. And when I went to stand up, they says, "What is it? Where is she?" I says, "She's right out here in the front yard." And I went and peeped behind them curtains. And she's gone. And I didn't see her nowhere. And I thought, well, I'm sorry, I feel silly now, but there was a woman here. And they said, "Well, we'll send somebody out, you know. We'll send somebody out to see how you're doing." And I said, "Well, okay." And I was glad because they knew I lived out here by myself, you know. And I'm waiting directly. They come out, and Pat and Terry, you know, the policemen's at that time. And they come out and shine the flashlight down mine over there. I said, "No, it ain't no, you know, look like no muddy footsteps," because like I said, it was raining hard. And they says, "No." And they says, one fella says, "Who was it? What was it?" And I described it. And I said, you know, told her about the hand and the dress. And he says, "You know, Rachel, do you remember Judy Ruthie? Judy Ruthie?" And I says, "Well, I remembered hearing something about it." He says, "I don't know if you believe in it or not, but now some of them out here, she was, you know, killed over there. Some old man, you know, attacked her and killed her over there. But now that was about two or three farms over. But he says, you know, they didn't find her for the longest time, and she was wandering around. And I reckon where he, I don't like to think of it, but I reckon where he stabbed her. And she was crying around for help. And they finally found her down where she fell face first in a creek down there, over to Tard Creek. And she fell over down there. And I forgot all about it, but of course, you know, you ain't thinking like that ghost or nothing. But that's what it was now. And I went to bed that night and never thought nothing more about it. Directly around, I reckon around 2 or 3 in the morning, I hear Pepper going off and going, having a fit. And I went up and I was in my bedroom in there, and I had that little old TV on in my bedroom. And I seen where the window was. It was kind of a little warm that night, and I had the window open just a little bit so them curtains just blowing. And I got up to go over there, and I thought, well, let me go close that then. And I went to close that window, and I'll tell you all directly, right as I went to close that window, a hand come up on that window and just slapped it, you know. And I'll tell you, I fell back. And then all of a sudden, there was that, her face, that woman, Ruth, that was her face that was there, stood there. And then my eyes, oh, Lord have mercy. I says, oh, I just prayed and prayed to the brother Jesus that something would happen. Somebody just protect me. And then she just, it was like somebody turned the TV off. It just kind of dimmed away. And I've never seen nothing like it again. I've heard things out there, but I'm afraid to look. You never know. Are you comfortable? Huh? You want something to drink? Okay, well, I've got others. You want to hear about why you want to hear them old scary things. But I've never been bothered by nothing again. I believe in the Lord, and He protect me out of here. Well, I'm going to go back in here and get me something else to drink. You sure you don't want something? Okay then, honey, I'll go out here. Okay.
And here's a story from Gathau in St. Paul, Minnesota. Warehouse ghost. I just recently got laid off for my workplace. So I guess this year I can finally tell some unexplainable events that happened while I worked there for 9 years. I used to work for a major cable warehouse company. Some duties would include receiving cable materials and palletizing used return cable boxes from customers. Story 1. My coworker Joe and my manager Greg were there at the time this happened. Joe was unloading a truck and received a few pallets of cable pedestal covers. Cable pedestal covers is a metal tube with a spherical end. Think of a hot dog cut in half, the long way. Pedestals allow a technician to access buried cable lines. My manager, Greg, came out of his office and decided he wanted to take a look at the covers. Joe was on a forklift, so I cut the shrink wrap completely off. Greg and I were inspecting a few of the pedestal covers, and all of a sudden one of the covers shot up into the air about 10 feet, like it was a rocket under tension. Our faces were stunned. A plain old pedestal cover, sitting on the top of the pallet, just shot up into the air and landed about 20 feet from us. My manager looked at Joe and I and said, "I think we're good," and he quickly walked away. Joe and I went over and checked out the cover on the ground. Everything looked completely normal. We just both shrugged and kept on working like nothing had happened. Story 2. A couple of years later, I had to stack a few cable boxes on pallets and then wrap them for storage. I was dealing with 10 cable box high per stack and 4 stacks per pallet. I had about 6 of those pallets laid around the warehouse ready to be shrink-wrapped. Also, the pallets were spaced about 5 feet apart from each other. In case one fell, it wouldn't create a domino effect. At that time, it was just a coworker and me in the warehouse. I was wrapping the first pallet, and he was getting ready to start the next one. As I finished wrapping my first pallet, I saw a shadow darting from my left vision and go right into the center of the pallets. My coworker saw the exact same thing. He dropped what he was doing, and we both stared at the center of the room. In the next few seconds, 5 to 10 pound cable boxes came flying right at us as if they were thrown. Luckily, none of us got hurt, because all of the cable boxes landed about 20 feet behind us, hitting the back wall. We both quickly ran out of the warehouse and stayed in the smoking area outside from the warehouse for a few minutes. We were trying to recount what had happened. We ran scenarios. Could it have been rats or something? But none of them made any sense. There was no way anything or anyone could have thrown 5 cable boxes at 10 pounds each in our direction. After we calmed down a bit, we went back inside and silently finished our work. I hope you all enjoyed last month's Mega Macabre show. It was quite an arduous task putting a 4.5-hour show together, and I couldn't have made it through without the help of my fiends. That's Best Fiends. It's friends without the R. Best Fiends is a free-to-download Match 3 mobile puzzle game. So whenever things got puzzling for me, putting together the Halloween show, I'd take a break and clear a few levels of Best Fiends. I'd suggest you do the same. I play Best Fiends via Facebook, and I have many Facebook friends competing there. I'm now swiftly moving toward level 700. I'm at level 695 as we speak. What I find attractive about Best Fiends are the colorful, personality-filled characters. These characters can be upgraded, so you collect gold bars, diamonds, keys, and other prizes, and spend them on making their powers grow as they help you defeat slugs as you make your way across the Best Fiends map on a journey to Mount Boom. If you need to step away from daily stress or boredom, join in over the 100 million downloads of this 5-star mobile puzzle game, because Best Fiends is boredom's worst nightmare. And let me tell you, once you download Best Fiends, you won't be able to put it down. You'll be repeating the phrase, "just one more level," over and over. And you'll soon be wondering how you ever found the time to be bored. So download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. This next story is from Long Island, New York. The Haunted Rocking Chair, 1898. When I was a little girl, my father rented the old-fashioned house on Hempstead Harbor, Long Island, New York. It was a beautiful place with large grounds and had a magnificent view of the ocean. The ground floor of the house consisted of a front parlor, a library, a dining room, a kitchen, and a small room that opened up off the library. The small room had been used as a sitting room by the previous owner. The house was partially furnished when we moved in, and we decided to use some of that furniture. In the little room off the library, there had been an old-fashioned rocking chair with a cane back and upholstered seat. Father fitted up the little room as a smoking room, or as a den, as he called it. But it was such a pleasant and sunny room that I spent considerable part of my days there, reading and sewing. The little rocking chair I considered my special property, and at my request, my father let it remain in the room for my use. One rainy evening, several months after our arrival, Mother and I were in the house alone. Mother was suffering from a sick headache. My sister Mabel was away on a visit, and Father was detained in the city on business. That evening, I was in my mother's room reading to her, for, as I have said, it was my usual custom to spend my evening in the little sitting room off the library. Mother's room was directly over this, and any sounds that would have come from it we could have heard very plainly. Our servants were out for the evening, as it was their night off, so again we were in the house alone. While I was reading a story to my mother, I was suddenly surprised to hear the soft sound of someone singing in a low female voice. The singing appeared to be coming from the little smoking room below us. Mother heard the singing as well, and she asked me what it was. I thought it was very strange, but didn't think that it was anything supernatural. In fact, such a thought never crossed my mind. The singing went on from a high pitch to a low pitch as the voice of the singer rose and fell. My mother then asked me if someone was singing outside, but I told her that I was certain the voice was coming from down in Father's smoking room. I finally decided to go and investigate who the singer was. I went downstairs, and when I reached the smoking room, I paused for a moment at the closed door. I had to think hard, as I could not recall closing the door to the smoking room before heading up to Mother's room. As I stood there, I could clearly tell the song was indeed coming from the smoking room. The song sounded like an old lullaby, and I could also hear the creaking of the rocking chair moving back and forth. In my head, I pictured someone singing to put a baby to sleep. I slowly opened the door and paused before entering the room. The singing continued. I will never forget the strange feeling that came over me when I stepped into the room. I seemed to know there was another presence in that room, but I could not see it. I reached over and turned on the light switch. The singing stopped. There was nobody in the room. It was just as I had left it. I stood there for a few moments and went back out of the room as if nothing unusual had happened. Next, instead of heading back upstairs, I decided to wait in the library and watch the room through the open door. And then a strange thing happened. The rocking chair began to move slowly, back and forth. It rocked and rocked. Then very slowly, and almost indistinctly at first, came the song of the invisible singer. I didn't stand there waiting any longer. I stormed out of the library and up the stairs to Mother. I told her that one of the girls was back and was singing in the library. I lied because I didn't want to frighten her. She was feeling too ill for a surprise, and she accepted my explanation. For the next few hours, we heard the rocking chair singer, but it finally completely stopped after my father returned home. I told my father what had happened, and the next day we moved out. We learned afterward that the house was known to be haunted. A young married couple had lived there many years before, and that smoking room was the wife's favorite place in the house. The couple had a baby, but he became sick a few months after his birth, and he died shortly afterward. The young wife was stricken with grief, and she also died a short time after the death of her baby. Those who knew of the story said that on the anniversary of her death, the song she used to sing to her baby could be heard coming from that room, accompanied with the sound of the rocking chair moving back and forth. Other occupants of the house had the same experience as I did. A story from Paterson, New Jersey. Ghost of a Murdered Brother, 1901. I'm going to read a little bit about what happened at a 1901 Easter gathering, which led to what residents believed was a haunted apartment building. Pietro Pagnillo and Carmelo Pagnillo. Pietro and Carmela Pagnillo were brothers who moved to the U.S. from Italy. The two had a long-standing feud that began from a dispute regarding the sharing of property after their parents died in Italy. During their lives in New Jersey, they became bitter enemies, and each brother built up a lot of influence and became leaders of rival segments within the Italian population in the area where they lived, known then as White Alley. The details of this story were listed in a few different ways, but the one I'm going to share seems to be the real story. The Italian families that lived in the area agreed not to talk to the police, so they had a hard time getting the facts. And they also gave news sources wrong information, including changing of first and last names. And some said Carmela attacked his father with a knife, and that Pietro came to their father's defense. But their father had actually died in Italy before this took place. The murder. On Easter Sunday, April 7th, 1901, Pietro and his wife had people over to play cards while celebrating Easter at their apartment on Brook Avenue in Paterson, New Jersey. Their brother Carmela came by and tried to enter through the front door, but his entry was refused. Carmela left, but he swore to get vengeance. It wasn't long before Carmela returned. He smashed a window and crawled through and rushed at his brother Pietro with a pistol in his hand. The guests fled the apartment, and the two brothers were left alone to battle. Pietro knew his brother was intending on murdering him, so he grabbed an axe to defend himself, because everyone had axes within reach in their apartments back then. Just kidding, but Carmela began firing his pistol with poor aim, and Pietro swung and hit Carmela across the head with the axe, knocking him to the floor. Carmela half rose up and continued firing his pistol. Pietro was struck a couple of times, but one bullet struck him in the side and hit a vital organ. When the police arrived, the two were lying on the floor, glaring at each other, but too weak to fight anymore. They were both rushed to the hospital, and both died not long afterward. Pietro was 36 and left behind a wife. He was buried at the Holy Sepulchre Cemetery in Totowa, New Jersey. I'm not sure of Carmela's marital status, but he was buried in New Jersey at a different Catholic cemetery. The ghost. It was early July in the same year that Pietro had been murdered by his brother. Pietro's widow came screaming out of her unit and into one of the neighbors' homes. She was hysterical and yelling that she'd just seen her dead husband in her apartment. Then, two nights later at 9 p.m., every single faucet in the apartment complex was turned on and pouring out water all at the same time. And that event was followed 2 days later by the exact same thing happening. All the faucets in the complex turned on in each unit at the same time. Soon the tenants began to freak out about the ghostly happenings. and they began to think that perhaps Mrs. Paganillo had in fact seen her dead husband, and that Pietro Paganillo had returned to haunt the building. It was impossible for a living person to turn on all the faucets at the same time like that. A few nights after the faucets turning on, two men who lived in the complex said they saw a ghostly form flitting about the hallways. They attempted to follow it, but lost trace. It didn't take too long after the haunting events began for several of the families to decide they didn't want to live in the haunted complex, so they moved out. And even after some of these tenants had moved out, the units were locked up and empty. The lights in some of those units would turn on at night. That was proof positive to all the tenants that the ghost of the murdered Pietro Paganillo was haunting the apartment complex. Soon, all the remaining tenants found somewhere else to live and moved out in a hurry. The apartment complex was empty with "to rent" signs on every single door. Local Italians who heard the story claimed that Pietro wanted to wash away the blood spilled by his family, and that is why the faucets were turned on. Others said that Pietro had returned for revenge, but the only revenge he got so far has been to the poor landlord. And here's another murdered ghost. Ghost of a murdered person. This is from Chicago, Illinois. The ghost of the murdered doctor in 1889. The politics. Dr. Patrick Cronin was born in Cork, Ireland, and came to the U.S. as an infant. Over the years, he earned his doctor's degree and practiced medicine in the Chicago area. He also became involved in Irish politics. He became critical of an Irish organization based out of the U.S. that seemed to be committing terrorist acts against England with monies donated by Irish Americans. The organization denied the accusations, but yet Irish members in America who protested were expelled from the organization. Dr. Cronin was one who came forward and criticized the board, and he was dubbed a traitor and expelled. Cronin continued with his accusations against the board, and Sullivan, one of the leaders and a lawyer in Chicago, was overheard saying that he wished Cronin could be removed. The murder. On May 4, 1889, Cronin got a knock on the door. A man in a carriage asked for his assistance, that an employee of O'Sullivan had been injured. Cronin begrudgingly accepted. He grabbed his bag, climbed aboard the carriage, and was never seen alive or heard of again. A few weeks later, on May 22nd, the public works received complaints that something was jamming up the sewer and there was a terrible odor emanating from it. Public works went to clear the sewer and discovered the body of Dr. Cronin. The murder scene was eventually found in a small cottage behind an ice house on O'Sullivan's property. In the end, three people, including O'Sullivan, were convicted of the murder and imprisoned for life. The ghost. By 1891, the cottage where the murder took place was being used by Mr. and Mrs. Carlson. And in the early summer of 1891, residents in the vicinity of the cottage where the murder took place began hearing strange noises and seeing strange things, which led many to believe Dr. Cronin's ghost was haunting the cottage. A few people said they actually saw a ghost of the dead doctor looking out the windows of the cottage. But it all began on June 18th, when Mrs. Carlson, who lived at the cottage with her husband, was awakened by strange cries, moans, and the sound of feet moving about. On that same night, someone else said they saw a ghostly form, enveloped in a white shroud, appear at one of the windows in the front room. And peering out of the window, the ghost let out moans and cries. The ghost was described as having the head and shoulders of a man, with features that were distorted in pain and anguish. The stories began to spread around the neighborhood very quickly, and people gathered to watch every night, wondering if the ghost of Dr. Cronin haunted the cottage. Miss Jenny Silva said she saw the strange white indistinct form through the window. She brought her friend, Miss Taft, who knew Dr. Cronin, to see if she could identify the face, but the face was too indistinct. Another gentleman, Joseph E. Specht, a florist, who lived nearby at 1198 Lincoln Avenue, was also a spiritualist. He said he felt Cronin return to the living to point out other accomplices to his murder. He volunteered spending a night in the cottage to make contact with the dead doctor and to pass on any messages along to friends. Two men who spent the night in a streetcar for a paving company said they could see the house from where they were at night, and they had seen lights in the front windows and strange, uncanny reflections. Mr. Carlson, who lived there with his wife, had become so frightened of the ghost that he requested the presence of a police officer at night because he was afraid for his life. When Mrs. Carlson was about to share more information about the ghost with the press, Mr. Carlson hushed her. For weeks, the neighborhood buzzed at midnight as curious onlookers watched for the ghost of the murdered Dr. Cronin. Kansas City, Missouri. The Noisy Ghosts on Robert Street, 1905. George Martin, a popcorn wagon operator, and E.L. Kramer, his tenant, had been living at a home that sat at Robert Street and Indiana Street in Kansas City, Missouri, for 3 years. However, while they were living there, the two were constantly bothered by two ghosts. Ghosts they later found were Andrew and Lena. The ghostly events of Andrew and Lena kept them awake on many nights. In fact, things got so bad that the two decided to move to a home at 3827 East 10th Street. George Martin said that the haunting began going on so long that they were actually getting used to it. They just learned to ignore it or tried to humor the ghost. They realized they had no power to stop him. After living there for a year or so, and 18 months before moving out, Mr. Martin decided to hire a spiritualist to try to contact and quiet the noisy ghosts. The spiritualist told Mr. Martin that his home was indeed haunted. It was haunted by two ghosts, one man and one woman. She said the woman had been shot on the second floor. She ran upstairs and fell. She recovered and then ran to her bed, where she fell and died. As the experiences continued, Mr. Martin finally decided to move. But a few days before they were going to move, things finally peaked. One night, Mr. Martin was washing his face and getting ready to sit down for dinner, while his other tenant, Mr. Kramer, was at the other end of the hall, when Mr. Martin distinctly heard three pops from a gun in the hallway. Mr. Martin scrambled out the door of his room while Mr. Kramer jumped out from another room, and they met in the hallway. "Gosh sakes!" Mr. Kramer exclaimed. "What you celebratin'?" Thinking Mr. Martin had fired the shots, while Mr. Martin thought the same of Mr. Kramer. There was no gunfire. It was the ghost. Annoyed, the two turned back and went into their rooms. That very same night, as both men were bedded down for the night, five pistol shots went off in the same hallway. Both men yelled at the ghost to let them sleep The next day, they moved out of the house. Along with Andrew's ghostly gun sounds and other noises, there was also Lena's ghost the two men had to deal with. They would often hear the voice of Lena sobbing and wailing at all hours. Although he'd moved out, Mr. Martin still had possession of the house until November 9th. So he decided to hire another spiritualist to hold a séance and talk comfortingly to the ghost. That spiritualist also said there were two troubled ghosts haunting the home, Andrew and Lena. Both had been murdered on the property 30 years prior by a gang of villains who lived there. The spiritualist added that the bodies of Andrew and Lena were buried in the basement of the home. Mr. Martin said the two spiritualists, one from 18 months ago and one from after moving out, had the same exact stories, except that one said the killings were done because of jealousy, while the other one said it was over a card game. Also, one of the spiritualists said Lena had been shot in the right temple, while the other one said it was on the left side. The home on Roberts in Indiana had not been built yet 30 years ago when the murders of Lena and Andrew occurred. Regardless of the fact, Mr. Martin still believed the ghosts at the house to be Andrew and Lena. And as a reference, I was able to find the intersection, a house at the intersection of Roberts and Indiana in Kansas City, Missouri. And there are some very old homes there. In fact, one of them that I looked up had been built in the year 1900. So there's a good chance that home is still there. And I wonder if the new owners or whoever's living there now, if anyone's living there, still hear the ghosts of Andrew and Lena. And I forgot to mention, I have an Anything Ghost VIP group, if you don't know about it. If you want the complete archive of Anything Ghost, there were a couple shared here today. If you want to hear 14 years, almost 15 years of Anything Ghost, then go check it out. Go to anythingghost.com and then click on the VIP group tab. That'll give you more information. There's a one-time fee to get the complete archive of Anything Ghost.
Hi Lex and Anything Ghost listeners, this is Andrea again in Northeast Tennessee, and I wanted to share, I guess you could call it a ghost story, maybe, I don't know, it involves a Ouija board, and I know a lot of people have varying opinions on how talking boards, spirit boards work, whether or not you should use them, and so on. I have used them for probably going on 30 years now, and I've never had a negative experience, never had anything bad happen, no negative fallout, anything like that. Certainly had some spooky and strange occurrences, but you know, that's partially part of the reason why you use it, right? So anyways, onto the story. This happened, I believe it was New Year's of 2016. My dad was working for our local, the city here, for their New Year's festivities, so he wasn't going to be home until the wee hours of the morning, and my mom didn't want to, you know, spend New Year's all alone, so I went to stay with her, and I took my Ouija board, because it was a perfect opportunity for her, for the two of us to use it, because my dad doesn't like to have it around, so if he's not around, we can use the board. So anyways, we're using the board, had been using it for a while up to this point, and at one point it started just randomly spelling something out over and over again, it seemed, and rather quickly, and we were finally able to figure out that it was spelling Tammy Leon, as if it was one word. It took us a little bit to figure it out, it was over and over, and we were finally like, okay, Tammy Leon, and then it, you know, the board just kind of calmed down. It was almost like it was in response to us figuring out what was being spelled out. So we continued to use the board, and the spirit that we were communicating with told us that her name was Sue. She gave her last name and stated that she was my dad's aunt. And at this point, my mom looked at me and said, your dad does not have an aunt by this name. He doesn't have an Aunt Sue. So we continued to use the board. I don't really remember what else that Sue told us. And so anyways, the next morning next day when we were speaking to my dad, we just kind of, we didn't want to let him know, we were using a Ouija board, because he really does not like to have that in his house. But we kind of brought up the topic of his Aunt Sue in a way. And, my mom said, you never had an Aunt Sue, did you? And he was like, yeah, I did. And we just looked at each other and didn't say anything. And then my mom said, well, I've never heard you talking about her before. And he said, well, her name, and I cannot remember what he said her name was. I think it was like Rita Sue or something like that. And he said that the family had always called her Rita. And I think that's what it was. She didn't like that name. So when she got older to be a teenager, young adult, she started going by Sue. She'd rather, asked her. So her friends and thing, people like that, that's what they called her. And he said that her husband, Leon, always called her Sue. And when he said that, we just looked at each other. And he said, my mom, I think, again, said, well, you've never told me about her. I've never heard you talk about her. He said, well, I never really knew her. She died when she was pretty young, and I never got a chance to know her, really. He said, all I know is that she was married to a man named Leon, and that she had a daughter named Tammy, and that he met them once or twice when he was a kid. So at this point, me and my mom are trying to be really inconspicuous, not trying to raise any suspicions, but looking at each other like, what? Eventually later on, she told him about our Ouija board session and told him about that. And he just, I don't know what his response was, but it was kind of a mind-blowing thing, even though I've used boards. And I do think that we can communicate with those who've gone on. That's probably the most mind-blowing experience I've ever had with the boards. It's the only thing that I've communication that I've ever had where I've been able to verify the information that I would receive from whoever I was communicating with. So my mom and I have talked with her through the board several times after that, but it's been a while since we have been able to get in touch with Sue on the board again. But I just thought that was, I just think that's really neat, and thought it might be something that you and other Anything Ghost listeners may enjoy as well. Take care.
Okay, everyone, that's it for show number 274, the Leftover Halloween Candy Show. I'll talk to you in December of 2020 for show number 275. Thanks, everyone, for your stories. I'll talk to you then. Until then, keep safe and take care.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.